My next guest is the founder and director of the Anxiety Treatment Centre in Chicago. He's an expert in the treatment of panic and anxiety disorders and has conducted training and seminars throughout the US. Dr. David Carbonell, welcome to UCA Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
So, tell me a bit about what it is that you do. I mean, anxiety, panic, tell me a bit more about what that involves.
Sure. Well, I'm a psychologist. I work with all manner of fears and phobias, any kind of problem in which anxiety is at the core. And the heart of it is when people have any of the different anxiety disorders, they experience this mental discomfort, all kinds of unpleasant thoughts, all manner of distressing physical sensations. They become afraid, and they naturally, inevitably, struggle against that, and they try to fight off the fear. And in that moment, when they get into the fight with the fear, which can go on their whole life if they never find out any different, that's when they get stuck. That's when they get caught up in what we would think of as an anxiety disorder. And so the through line of my job is to help them get out of that struggle and learn how to work with the sensations and the thoughts rather than against, and because that's the path out.
So, I mean, today I think we just discussed before we're going to specifically talk more about panic and panic attacks.
Mm-hmm,
and yeah. You've been working in this field for over 20 years. What would you say, because I know in today's society it's a kind of very 24/7, a lot of stress. Do you think that's contributory to more and more people experiencing panic and anxiety?
Oh, I suspect so, because we need to do everything in a hurry. And so we're multitasking. We don't have a lot of time and attention to give to any one task. And so all the more likely we are to try and rush through it and push against it and fall victim to some of the ways that panic tricks you. So I certainly think that the busy society aspect of it makes us easier targets for panic attacks.
So for anybody that's maybe experienced panic attacks in some way or another, what would you say is the most important starting point for them to get through that or get over it, or for it not to develop onto anything more?
Well, I have two starting points in mind, one large and conceptual and one very small and concrete. The large conceptual one is to recognize that panic tricks them into taking the bait and into opposing it, that a person's gut instinct of what to do during a panic attack is almost inevitably dead wrong. And that's not just because they're making a mistake. That's the nature of panic attacks. It tricks you into tensing your body when you should relax, into holding your breath when you should breathe more easily, into running away when you should just hang out. So that's one starting point, that your natural instincts during a panic attack work against you, and you have to find something else to do. If I could only show people one thing to do, it would be the breathing, a nice diaphragmatic or belly kind of breathing. Getting back to breathing the way you did when you were a newborn, rather than the kind of chest breathing that people with panic attacks get caught up in.
And what would you say, because I know that, you know, it's possible for some people just to maybe have one episode of panic and for other people to start having multiple panic attacks with kind of avoidance behaviours.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the people that can just seem to, for whatever reason, just have one out of the blue, and then for those that develop more?
Well, I think the difference is basically how strong or weak a candidate you are for panic disorder. We know that there are genetic predispositions, that some people are, by virtue of their genetic and biological heritage, very good candidates, very likely candidates to develop panic disorder, and other people are really poor candidates. They're more likely to get some other kind of problem, maybe high blood pressure or substance abuse. So people will vary depending on how strong or weak their prospects are for developing panic disorder. And I think those who have one and shrug it off and go on through their life and aren't troubled by it anymore, they were just not strong candidates to get it to begin with.
So what are some of the keys then, whether you've just had one or whether you've had a few or whether you've had kind of symptoms like that for years, what are the keys? You talked already a bit about breathing, the keys to getting through this and over this.
The key to the breathing is people understandably, when they feel their breathing gets short and shallow and labored, they have the correct idea. They need to take a deep breath, but then they go right to the inhale and they gasp. And even though they're thinking of deep breath, they're taking a very shallow breath. If they put their hand on their chest when they take that breath, they'll see that all the muscular work is being done by the chest, and they'll probably notice their shoulders going up and their head going up, and that makes the feelings worse rather than better. So what does a person actually need when they have that sense, oh my God, I can't catch my breath? Even though their brain is screaming at them, take a deep breath, take a deep breath, what they really need to do is first sigh, actually a little exhale. It's counterintuitive, but they need to sigh and then let that sigh cause their shoulders and upper body to relax. And then, only then, are they in a position to do what they wanted to do, which is to take a truly deep breath, which is going to be a breath by pushing their stomach out and inhaling that way, just like a newborn does. If you want to see a world-class belly breather, you go look at the newborns. Their tummies go out when they inhale, their tummies come in when they exhale, and that's how we ought to be breathing. Most people with panic attacks do the opposite of that.
And I read your book, the Panic Workbook, and in that you give, it's like a five-step process, isn't it? It's aware, it's like... You take
yes.
five different steps. Could you explain a bit more about that, that people could do consistently to overcome this?
Sure. The word is aware, AWARE, and each of those letters stands for a step in responding to the onset of a panic attack. And that first A stands for acknowledge and accept. In this sense, oh, I'm starting to have a panic attack. That's the acknowledgement. I'm not going to try and ignore it. I'm not going to try and pretend it's not happening. I'm not going to try and distract myself. I don't like it. I don't want it. I don't deserve it. But this is the present reality. I'm starting to feel panic. And accept in the sense of, well, if this is what I have to feel now, so be it. I'll feel whatever I happen to feel right now and work with it rather than try and fight it off rather than ask the deity to rescue me somehow, that I'll deal with whatever feelings I have. If I'm sad, if I'm happy, if I'm jealous, if I'm angry, if I'm panicky, I'm having some emotions and some sensations, and I'll just work with it. And what in the natural reaction to panic, what people tend to do is all the opposite of that. They try to pretend it's not happening. They try and deny it. They try and ignore it. They tell themselves, stop thinking about that, and they try and fight it off. And all of those things make it worse. And as I go through the aware steps, I think your listeners who have panic attacks will recognize probably, well, that's the opposite of what I usually do. And that's exactly right. That's what they need, something quite different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's acknowledge and accept. The W stands for wait and watch. Wait there, have the feelings, work with it, resist the urge to flee or run away. Just hang out and give the panic a chance to pass. And watch in the sense of people need to become a better observer of what goes on with them during a panic attack, to notice what their thoughts are, to notice what they're doing with their shoulders and the muscles of their legs and their breathing and so on. So the best form of watch is I ask people to fill out a questionnaire during a panic attack. Those are available for free download on my website. But that's the ultimate of becoming an observer. Let's take some notes about the panic so that I can be a good observer. The more I'm in the observer stance, the less likely I am to get caught up in the victim stance.
Mm-hmm, 'cause it gives a little bit of distance as well.
That's right. To get a little bit of emotional distance. Now I'm studying this thing rather than feeling like it's hitting me over the head.
Mm-hmm.
So that's acknowledge and accept, wait and watch. The next day in the word stands for action. Now, perhaps, is the time for me to take some kind of action. Not right at the beginning, because if a person takes action right at the beginning, the action they're liable to take is to run away. Probably going to do something wrong. So acknowledge and accept, wait and watch. This is a chance to buy a little time, get your brain in gear, start remembering where my interests really lie. And so that might be the time for action. And what kinds of actions? Well, what's a person's job during a panic attack? It's not to save themselves. It's not to rescue themselves. It's not to do anything like that, because, and it's not to make the panic attack end, because every panic attack ends no matter what you do. Even the very first one that people have, when they never heard of the notion, they don't know the word for it, they have no idea what's happening, that one ends too. Every panic attack ends no matter what you do. So it isn't your job in this action phase to make it end. Rather, it's your job. Let's see if I can be a little more comfortable while I'm waiting for it to end. Those are the actions. And so breathing, filling out the diary, those are classical tasks in the action phase. Get involved once again in the environment, the circumstances where you are. If you're in a grocery store, go ahead and shop. If you're driving, tend to the driving task of, you know, watching the road and using your signals and so on. If you're giving a presentation, connect again with the audience. Get back involved in what's going on around you. But there's nothing you have to do to make yourself any safer. You're already as safe as you're going to be.
And I think one of the things in that is that I think a lot of people can tend to get all these catastrophic thoughts about what might happen to them. You know, be it like humiliation in front of people or fainting or...
Yes, yes, that they'll die, they'll have a heart attack, a stroke, some terrible physical catastrophe, that they'll faint dead away, that they'll start to tremble and look so foolish that everyone will laugh and make fun of them. You know, no mild thoughts are going to occur then. They're all these catastrophic ones.
Mm.
And so I invite your listeners... You know, they're probably well aware of the catastrophic thoughts they have during a panic attack. Go back and review your history with this. What's your track record with these thoughts? How many times, it sounds silly to say it, how many times have you died? How many times have you gone crazy? How many times have you fainted dead away? Probably none, although they likely felt like, oh, I was so close to fainting, that there are sensations of a panic attack that make people think they're about to faint.
Mm-hmm.
But fainting is very, very difficult during a panic attack. It's almost unheard of.
Is that just due to physiology, then?
Is that due to the which?
The physiology? Their physiology?
Oh, yes, because, people ought to know what causes a faint. What causes a faint is a sudden and significant drop in your blood pressure. When your blood pressure drops a lot, that causes a faint. Now, people think of fainting as some terrible catastrophe. Actually, fainting is the body's self-protective device. If your blood pressure drops a lot, you probably can't get enough blood to your brain, and that's important to have a lot of blood to your brain. So if your blood pressure drops a lot, you can't get blood to the brain. Fainting is the body's way of bringing the brain down to the blood.
Mm-hmm.
It's a self-protective device. But what's most important is what's happening to your blood pressure when you're having a panic attack.
I guess it's going up slightly.
Yes, it's going up slightly. It's doing the exact opposite of what you would need to faint.
Mm-hmm.
The exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very difficult, very rare to faint during a panic attack unless you have some other condition that can overcome that and lower your blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
perhaps a blood phobia. But people feel all the time like they're going to faint because they have these sensations of feeling lightheaded, dizzy, a little trembly. That's all due to the shallow breathing that they're doing. That's got nothing to do with fainting at all.
And what about, because a lot of people have talked about feeling or worrying that other people will notice, that they'll be forever, you know, I don't know, catastrophic thoughts, but they'll be forever thought less of. And what would you say about that?
Well, what does your family notice when you're having a panic attack, I might ask? Have you ever had the experience of having a panic attack and your significant other or other people around don't seem to notice, and you feel kind of upset and alone from that? Don't you see what's happening to me? Well, for the most part, no, they don't, because there isn't all that much that's visible. You're feeling this powerful storm inside, and so it's natural to suppose, I must look like a wild person out there. My hair must be standing up. My eyes are probably bugging out. My skin is bright red like a lizard. But then you look and you see everybody's going on about their business around you. They don't seem to notice because it's very subtle. It isn't as obvious as you suppose. So that's another one of those thoughts that don't really describe your actual reality very well.
Mm-hmm. So we got through to the actions part of the aware of what to do. What's the R stand for?
Well, R stands for repeat, because, well, we needed an R there to make the word work. but it's also to serve as a reminder that you might start going through the steps, feeling better, okay, that's good, and then, whoa, here comes another wave of panic. And if R wasn't there with repeat, you might think, oh my God, it's not working. What'll I do now? I better run home. R is just there to remind you, well, you might need to go through this a few times. That's okay. Just take it from the top. Run through the steps again.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right. And E is there to remind you that the panic attack is going to end. And the panic is going to end no matter what you do. The panic attack will end if you get fooled into doing everything in a way that might promote and prolong the panic. That one's still going to end. And it'll end if you do everything nicely as well. It's not up to you whether or not it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen regardless. And yet, one of the thoughts that people will constantly have during a panic attack, all kinds of thoughts about, oh my God, when is it going to end? What if it never ends? What if it goes on forever? How can I make it end? There's going to be a lot of thoughts about end. It's going to end no matter what you do.
So really, I mean, all these thoughts that people are having during, and maybe at other times as well, maybe beforehand, they're not an accurate kind of realization of necessarily what's going on.
That's absolutely correct. These thoughts are not accurate at all. These thoughts are symptoms of anxiety. These thoughts are simply symptoms. They mean the same thing as the trembling, perhaps, of your hand, or the sweat that comes off your forehead, or the uncomfortable sensation in your chest. They're just mental forms of anxiety symptoms,
mm-hmm.
and they need to be understood that way. They're not an important signal, they're just symptoms.
And that would also go for because a lot of people might develop kind of worries that they might experience another panic attack, so kind of anticipation of it.
Oh yes, all the what-if thoughts ahead of time. You know, what if this, and what if that, and what if there? And really, if you think about it, the important part of all of those thoughts is just the first two words, the what if part. Because that what if part, it really means, let's pretend something bad. And then the rest, whatever comes after that, that's just to fill in the blank, let's put in a catastrophe. What if this and what if that?
Mm.
And so when I'm working with clients with panic attacks, I want them to become very aware of the what if part, because that's the tip-off. That's the announcement that says, stand by, I'm going to invite you to think about something awful that isn't happening now.
So would you use the aware steps for the anticipatory anxiety as well?
No, not so much. With the thoughts, I want people to notice the what if and recognize, okay, I'm anxious. Shall I think about that for a minute, or can I let it go?
Mm-hmm.
And treat that more with, you know, do I want to accept the invitation to worry or not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
and the whole thing there is catching the what if. You know, if you think about it, if a dog comes up and bites me in the leg, I don't say, what if a dog bites me? When I say what if, it's because the thing isn't actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we need to say it. It's let's pretend.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say then, if somebody starts using the aware steps, They're still getting a lot of panic. What would you say to them about that? Is there a specific way that they should stop avoidance behaviours?
Oh, yes. You know, they probably need to engage in specific practice with the situations, the triggers, the activities that set off the panic. That it may not be enough to just know how to respond to it when it comes, that you may need to go out and have some actual practice with it. And that's typically what's called, you know, an exposure program, where if somebody's afraid of panicking, say in stores, that they on a regular basis go out and visit some crowded stores and be in that crowding circumstance and let themselves feel anxious and practice going through the aware steps there until the anxiety leaves. That may not be enough to simply to use the aware steps to fend it off. They need to go practice.
And how long would you say that if someone's experiencing it on a kind of ongoing basis in lots of different situations and they start doing the aware steps and going into these situations and they feel it more perhaps to begin with, how long would you say it should be until they see a difference? Because the danger, I guess, would be that they maybe make some good steps and then they get angry or whatever because they then take a step backwards.
Yeah. Well, I would expect that they ought to at least have a gut reaction, a sense that, oh, wow, this is different. This is taking me in the right direction. That this is helpful. That ought to happen relatively quickly within the first 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, having a bad day and then thinking you're taking a step backwards, well, you know, we all have bad days. Whatever it is that bothers us, we're going to have bad days. So certainly in the course of getting over this and in practicing with it, from time to time people will have a bad day and have a stronger panic attack than they've gotten used to. And they might think, oh, this is a terrible setback. But it isn't really. It's just another panic attack, and you used to have them like that all the time. The fact that you even think to call it a setback now is a reflection of, well, I've been doing better. Why am I having a bad day now? Well, just because bad days are a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to look at it more like an average. I think on average, a person could expect that when they're working with this in the manner I've described, every month on average ought to be better than the one before.
Mm-hmm.
But every day, certainly not, because that's too short. And even every week, it's not hard to have a bad week.
Mm.
But I think if they look at a monthly kind of average, that it's reasonable to suppose that when I'm working with this effectively, every month ought to be at least as good and probably better than the month before.
So what you're saying really then is it's not an overnight thing. It's like it's an ongoing thing, and you know you're looking for more good days than bad over a month or so, and you keep doing that every month, just reevaluate.
Yes, exactly. Not on a day-to-day basis, but on, you know, a monthly basis. I think that's long enough because none of us ever get so good at handling life that we never have any bad days. You know, whatever our burdens are.
Mm-hmm. So for anyone that would be interested in learning more about what you do, I know you've got a website with a lot of self-help material on there. What is your website?
The website is anxietycoach.com, www.anxietycoach.com. And on there I have videos demonstrating the breathing technique, and I have a couple of articles explaining the aware steps. A lot of rather detailed self-help materials that I think your listeners will find useful.
And that covers other anxiety disorders as well?
Yes, yeah. There's probably the most material about panic, but there's also materials there about specific phobias and social anxiety disorder. And fear of flying and fear of public speaking and so on.
Mm-hmm. And you've also got the panic workbook it's called? Panic attack workbook?
The panic attacks workbook.
And that's got very specific information for anyone that's maybe had or going through panic attacks or panic disorder.
Yes, that's a self-help workbook. It's filled with instruction and questionnaires and writing tasks and practice assignments and so for somebody that wants to work on this on their own, they can get the book and start at page one and go through, and there'll be as I say, descriptions of what to think about and understand, and also exercises that will show you how to do the kinds of exposure practice that I mentioned.
And how would they get hold of that book?
Well, you can. There's information about it, and you can order it directly from my website.
At anxietycoach.com. That's anxietycoach.com.
And so people can actually get the book. Basically, is it basically like having some sessions with you, just following the same kind of exercises that you would do?
Yes, yeah. I tried to write this book to give you as much as possible the same experience, the same steps that you would get as if you came into my office to work with panic attacks. So it's the very same set of steps and set of instruction that I would do in face-to-face treatment.
Fantastic. And have you got any plans to come over to the UK?
Huh. Well, I don't have any right now. But God willing, I'll get over there at some point. I've never actually been to the UK. So I no immediate plans, but always ready to accept an invitation.
Well, you need to keep in touch with us and let us know if you do plan to come over, and continue to let us know about the self-help stuff that you have available on your website. Dr. David Carbonell, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.